You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
In 2008, Julie Dean founded the Cambridge Satchel Company at her kitchen table with just £600. The business has now grown to over 80 staff and revenue of almost £12 million, with the satchels now sold in over 100 countries worldwide. Here to share with us her phenomenal story is Julie Dean, the founder of the Cambridge Satchel Company. Julie, welcome to The Breakfast Grill and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much for inviting me on.
How did the idea to create the Cambridge Satchel come about?
What I usually say to people is that I'm not somebody who thinks of themselves as a typical entrepreneur. You know, I wasn't looking for businesses to start. But what I was looking for was a way to help my family. And I think that's what makes people able to relate so easily to my story. So I was a stay-at-home. I was a full-time mum. And my children were 6 and 8 when I first became aware that my daughter was being bullied at school. And she'd become very quiet and she started not wanting to go into school. But I hadn't realized how bad things had got until there was one occasion when she was literally on the floor and she was being kicked on the floor. And she didn't fight back or anything. And I knew then, you know, I spoke to my mum and we just said, we've got to get her to a school where she feels really happy and excited again to take part in learning, because education is so important. And so I made a promise to my little girl, and I said to her, you will never, ever go back to that school. And so that meant that I had the period of the school summer holiday, so about 8 weeks to come up with something. And my mum and I went and had a look at all the different schools around Cambridge until we felt that we found one that was absolutely perfect for her. And I think that it's important that what we did was we decided we would look at state schools and private schools and not even think about how much it was going to cost, because if we were going to do this, we had to be very, very motivated. And the only way you can become incredibly motivated and passionate enough that it's going to drive you as much as you need to be driven is if you have a dream that you think is something that is so fantastic that you will keep working at 3 o'clock in the morning for. So that's what we decided to try and find. What I did do is I just sat down and thought, right, I've got 8 weeks. I know now how much money I need to make. Before tax, I worked that out to, you know, what I would actually need to make. And so I knew the mountain that I'd set myself. I knew exactly what the challenge looked like. And then I made a list of 10 things that I thought I could do to make school fees. And that list I did on a spreadsheet so that, you know, the column one was, do I have enough money to start this venture? And column two is, will it produce money early enough to be able to move schools in September? And then column three was, well, what would happen if I got run over by a bus while I was doing this? You know, is it something that could carry on without me? Is it something that's scalable? And so it was just taking 10 very different ideas and ranking them along on my spreadsheets, and Satchels was on there, and that was the one that sort of seemed the best bet to me. But it was by no means, and I really think that there are a lot of people that would be able to take that approach. You know, all you need to be is a difficult enough, picky enough person. If you're the kind of person that sits down and thinks, oh, well, this is irritating, this handle on this mug, it's not the right shape, you know, it's a stupid shape, it's burning my fingers, it's not good for purpose, I could do better than that. If you find yourself getting frustrated with things because they're not exactly right, then that is ideal. You know, you're the ideal person to think what is irritating you most, and instead of just moaning about it, go out there and try and do better.
But you didn't have a background in fashion before this. If I'm not mistaken, you were an accountant. How did you decide to break into the fashion industry? It's not an easy one to crack.
It is a tough cookie to crack, but I think that any industry, if you're going to really crack it, is going to be a tough one. And you can't set out with an idea of this one is going to be easier than this one, so I'm going to head for this one. You always need to head for the thing that you feel most passionate about. And if that's in a tough area, then that's your bad luck, really. But you've just got to get on with it. And, you know, if that's where your belief is and that's where your passion is, then that is the only road and you don't really have a choice. You've just got to get on with it.
So you had the idea to put a modern twist to the Cambridge satchel. If I'm not mistaken, you'd started to do this for school children, but then they became wildly popular among fashionistas and celebrities alike. How big are men as a part of your customer base? Do you get a lot of male customers requesting
for
bags?
We do get quite a lot. So we did a really fantastic collaboration with Christopher Shannon for London Fashion Week last year, and all of those bags completely sold out. So even though they're higher priced bags, they were really wacky, big, thick straps, you know, backpack version. And those were launched in Selfridges in London, and they completely sold out so quickly. It was incredible. I'd say men are probably about 30% of our business.
Wow, okay, that's significant. What about your overseas customers? How much of your sales comes from overseas, or is it just a local clientele?
No, we sell, Lane Crawford is a very big customer of ours, Lane Crawford in Hong Kong and in Beijing, and then also Bloomingdale's in the States, and also in Dubai and Kuwait, Istanbul. So we sell to 126 different countries and make about 900 bags a day. And so they're going absolutely everywhere. I'd say it's probably 60% overseas for us.
So why do you think there is such a universal appeal to this bag? I mean, despite it being so quintessentially British.
Yes, I think that people, they really love, a lot of it is about the story. So they know that this was something that was just started with £600. That's what I budgeted to start this business. And I've never borrowed a penny, and I've had no big investors, you know, come in. And so we have kept it all completely in the family. It's just me and my mum. And from that £600 on day one, we sell, our turnover is about £1 million a month now. So there's an exciting story behind it. I think the story of how somebody can start something like that that becomes a global fashion craze from their kitchen is what made us the perfect choice for Google. Google Chrome featured us as the face of Google Chrome in the UK. And so they made a one-minute film about the company, and they put it on YouTube under Julie Dean. And that's received 5 million hits in the last 6 months alone. So people love the story and just find it inspirational. And the bags themselves, they're made in the UK. Every single one is made by hand, so they'll last for ages and ages. And they're just straightforward, beautifully designed, beautifully made bag that's at a price that most people can afford.
I did watch the Google Chrome advert. It was brilliant, and I think it showcased really what it took to build your brand. But going back to maybe the internet, and I understand bloggers as well were very instrumental in getting the word out for your product.
Well, I think that without the internet, I wouldn't have had a business at all, because everything from sourcing the first manufacturer to looking online and doing my research, my initial research, it was all done from the kitchen computer. And so without the internet, there wouldn't have been a business. And then without bloggers, that business wouldn't have become a global business. And so whereas, you know, we've never paid for advertising, not a penny. We've never had an advert. It's all word of mouth. It's completely word of mouth. It's completely through the bloggers, through our customers loving them so much that they would write glowing testimonials that would be put on the website, and they'd tell other people, and we'd get celebrities phoning us, even when we were still in the kitchen. And huge shops like Urban Outfitters in the States phoning us in the kitchen and asking us if we had a London showroom. We didn't have a London showroom. We had a kitchen just outside Fenditton. And so it was absolutely all done through writing in those first days, writing and contacting all of the bloggers, every magazine editor, every lifestyle editor, every newspaper editor, and just saying to them, I don't have the budget to send you a free bag to review, but these are photos of our bags, and this is why I'm doing it, and this is my story. And if you like it, and you think that it's something that you can honestly write about and say you think that this is a lovely thing, then please do that, and thank you for your time. And luckily, you know, it was picked up by so many people that then when it came that we wanted to start making different colors and unique colors, it's very hard to get a batch of leather dyed. You need to dye quite a big batch at a time, you know, enough for about 110 bags. And in the early days, you know, I was selling one or two bags a day, and that was over four colors, so it would have taken ages. It was a very big risk for us back in those days to get a batch of leather dyed a particular color. But one way that the bloggers helped us was we ran a competition on one of the big fashion blogs called What I Wore. And so we had absolutely so many, a huge, huge response to that, a huge response. And so through that, I managed to sell twice as many bags as I needed to cover the minimum leather quantity being dyed. And so, you know, I had the cash up front, and so I could go ahead and do it with complete certainty that that had been done. And there wasn't, you know, I don't really consider myself a great risk taker.
But, you know, this is an industry that is all about taking risks, especially because, you know, it's so fickle. So how do you push that creative boundary? You did say you played with color, but the design and style of the product is very traditional.
Well, I think we've got collaborations, you know, from people like Chris Benz in the States and Comme des Garçons for Tokyo and in Paris, Christopher Shannon in London, Basso and Brooke in London, and possibly the biggest name yet will come out in June. And so by working with just the absolute best, the most cutting-edge designers, they all bring a new slant to the bag, and they keep us moving forward. And with the fluorescence, you know, that nobody had been producing fluorescent bags before those came out. That was really, really something different. And that's why when it was spotted, there's a big feature in the New York Post about it at New York Fashion Week. It would be in 2010. And they called it the Brit It bag. But we're always very conscious of the need to keep moving forward. And so whilst I think the underpinning of our business is our core range, and we keep adding to that and bringing in new colors, we do keep bringing in new designs and working on very high-profile collaborations to keep it fresh.
I'm speaking to the Cambridge Satchel Company founder, Julie Dean. After this, we'll ask her more about competition from replicas.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
Julie Dean, the founder of the Cambridge Satchel Company. Julie, you mentioned earlier that it's very important to you that the bags are made in the UK, made in Cambridge. Why is that? Do you ever think about moving production perhaps to a cheaper country?
I think that it would be a lot easier. I have a real connection with these bags. And by looking at these bags, I can tell exactly where they've come from. And I like going down to the factory and speaking to the people who make them, understanding the process. It was very important to me to understand the process and to understand how I can make the bags better. And you can only do that by really understanding every single part of the manufacturing process in there. The other thing, I grew up in South Wales at a time when people were losing their jobs through mining, you know, and we would have huge villages and towns that would be wiped out. There'd be no jobs at all available because you just see the mines closing. And so now I really think that people can't stand by and think, oh gosh, that's strange, there's another factory closing, if they're not buying things that are made in their own country. You know, it's something that I feel like I need to stand quite firm on the manufacturing side, especially of the leather satchels. Maybe there'll be a product at some stage later on where you think, there's a country that's really stood by Cambridge satchels, so we're going to invest in manufacturing in that country. But it would be for ethical reasons. It wouldn't be for profit margin of 1% or 2%. That's not really what this company is about.
Mm. So how then do you deal with competition from replicas? Because, you know, you've seen replicas out there that can be almost as good as the real thing.
I think that there were one line of replicas that I completely despise. And those are the Zatchel's replicas, because that was my manufacturer that I set up and taught to make satchels and gave my patterns to, and they were my manufacturer, and they launched that brand behind my back, literally in a unit across the road that they kept locked up. And so that I felt was, you know, competition is fair enough and is to be expected when you've got something that's successful. But I think unethical manufacturers are something that I really cannot stand, and that's one of the reasons why I started my own factory. But then on others, what we have done is we have protected a lot of the elements of our design that are unique. And so we have protection on the fluorescence, we have protection on our see-through bags, and we have protection on various sort of color combinations and a contrast as a design. Because I think that you really must, as your business grows, you must try to protect it in whatever way you can. Because if you are successful, then people will try to imitate. And whilst imitation is apparently the most sincerest form of flattery, it does get quite irritating. And I think the other thing that I wasn't expecting to be faced with, but it's a consequence of the sort of the internet age, is the amount of policing that a successful business has to do now to make sure that they're trying to look and take quite an aggressive stand against websites that are set up to confuse customers. And so last September, there were 331 fake Cambridge Satchel websites out there. And that's a big problem for us, because we don't want people who have gone to the trouble of searching for the original and for the fashion leader in this area. They find out who you are, and then they want to buy from the Cambridge Satchel Company. We want to make sure that when they find the website, it's a website that will deliver the very highly crafted product that we've become known for. We don't want customers thinking they found us and then receiving something that is very much of an inferior quality, or not receiving anything at all. And I think that whilst it's great that people have freedom of expression on the internet, there is going to have to be more policing done to try and protect the consumer who goes shopping on the internet. But until that's in place, we've invested quite heavily in engaging a company called Mark Monitor in the States, who will go and make sure that any company that is obviously saying they're the Cambridge Satchel Company and aren't the Cambridge Satchel Company, or are using any of our trademarks or any of our protected IP, that we will take action against them until they make the position clear to their customers that they're not associated with us at all. And so if I was starting afresh again, and what I say to a lot of designers, go onto the internet or contact a government association, someone you can trust, and get something like a non-disclosure agreement or a manufacturing agreement, so that when you go out with your ideas and you take it to somebody else to make, you have something to ask them to sign. And if they show any reluctance about signing that, move on and find somebody else, because most manufacturers are reputable. But if you do happen to come across somebody like I had Zatchel's, then that could take your business and just take all your ideas from you. And that's all you have in the early days. So you need to try and protect yourself. That doesn't mean spend your entire startup budget on legal fees. But what it does mean is go and, you know, ask a government business advisor, or go onto the internet and just download free of charge a simple non-disclosure agreement or simple manufacturing agreement. And then at least you're doing something to protect your ideas, because that's all you have.
You mentioned that you've never had to be in debt ever, so you've self-funded your entire business.
Yes.
What happens when you want to expand in the future? Do you think you'll ever get investors on board?
I think that it's really good to never say never, to keep your options open, because it might well be that there's somebody out there that could open up a huge geographical territory or something like that and help out and be a partner in a business rather than just an investor. But in the early days, for me, it was absolutely the right way to go. And I would say that whereas it depends what stage you're at in your life, and you know, I have children, I have family, and I didn't want to take a huge risk on losing my house. You know, it might be that when you're young and feeling a bit more bullish, you think, oh, I'm really going to go for it, and you feel comfortable with that kind of risk. But I think that there are a lot of people out there, and there are a lot of mothers with children maybe at school who think, I'd love something to do while the children are at school, and I'd love to do something that would make life for my family better. And what I want to do is just to let them know that you can give that a go, because of the age we live in now with the internet, without needing to risk your house and feel that you're taking chances that you're just not comfortable with, because that's what I did, and it's worked out for me.
I've been speaking to Julie Dean, the founder of the Cambridge Satchel Company. Julie, thank you for speaking with us this morning.
Thank you very much for having me on.
I'm Melissa Idris for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by the CIMB Group, Southeast Asia's leading universal bank. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.